just not a better opportunity. And I really love it that this day, this particular day, they've added this commercial event, and we've got, of course, OCA, some OCA members that are involved in that commercial heifer sale and bred cow sale, and it has just been fantastic. And so kudos to these folks, and we're just blessed to have it right here in Oklahoma City.
I'd be really curious if they could ever quantify how many private treaty deals are done out in these barns.
Yeah, that would be fun to know. It has to be. I mean, I think just reasonable. Millions of dollars of primarily cattle, but also services and, you know, products and so forth have traded in the aisleways and in the trade show and in the stands and of course, at the sales themselves. But, excuse me, just... It's unparalleled, and we're just so blessed.
Let's talk about policy events. We got obviously state legislature on the horizon first a few days of February. Ahead of that, you've developed over the years a very interesting policy get together and kind of a final tweaking of what's going on in the life of OCA's policy ahead of the legislative session.
Yeah, it's January 21st this year, and it's our winter policy meeting, and we really set this up so that we could, as you mentioned, it's a day of policy only. We really get in the trenches, and we start pretty early. You got to do your chores. I say we got to do chores in the dark, and you got to do chores in the evening, but we just need you for one day. And from an OCA member standpoint, and it is truly an opportunity for OCA members to get together and talk about just the cusp of the legislative session, but then also the cusp of the NCBA annual convention. And then, of course, it gives us another opportunity on a federal perspective to tweak some policy if we need to, and then we can do that again in convention in July. So there's kind of a six-month gap on both sides. Really gives us an opportunity to be nimble regarding policy and right up front and address the policy needs that we have for our members.
Tell me about the program, some of the highlights you've got planned.
Yeah, we've got, so from a policy perspective, we're going to talk a lot about ad valorem tax. I think ad valorem is going to be one of the key issues that we're going to see in this legislative session as well as a while. Obviously, we've got a petition initiative out there, constitutional amendment to just absolutely remove property tax, ad valorem tax on residential houses in the country, and it's being sold as eliminate property taxes, but it's only on residential houses. So that's very dangerous. And so, but we're also seeing some additional measures in the legislature regarding ad valorem relief. Whether it be capping it for seniors, veterans, some of those types of policies, as well as just outright do away with it and shift to consumption type taxes, sales taxes. There's a lot of ramifications for that. So we're going to be talking a lot about that. We're going to talk about water. We're going to talk about other tax issues. We're going to talk in property rights issues. A big issue we're going to talk about is the poultry lawsuit. Obviously, we've got a couple of deadlines. I believe the court has put a deadline for the 12th on the stay, a motion for a stay. Then, obviously, it's being appealed. We're going to have Attorney General Gettner Drummond. He's going to be there to speak from the state's perspective. We're also having the Poultry Federation there to speak from the poultry industry perspective. We have a little bit of policy that's related to the science of this, specifically phosphorus. But there's a lot of questions that I'm getting from members regarding this lawsuit. Can it go beyond the Illinois Rivershed? We've actually sent the lawsuit to NCBA, to Mary Thomas at NCBA, and asked her to, you know, put your eyes on this. Is this something from a federal perspective we need to be aware of? Can it move beyond? I mean, it's obviously poultry litter, but it's specifically phosphorus. And so is there application beyond the watershed? And so we've just got a lot of questions, and so we want to ask the parties that are involved and learn, and then if we need to tweak our policy, fine. If not, then that's fine too. But we're not a party of the lawsuit, but we are certainly part of the discussion of the lawsuit, and we want to make sure that we're doing that in a very educated fashion.
Of course, with chicken litter being applied to pastures,
that's right,
we've got cattle on those pastures, and those pastures would not be nearly as good without that litter.
Absolutely. That's it's an organic, if you will, I shouldn't say organic. It's a natural-based fertilizer. And so, you know, if you've had litter applied, if you haven't had litter applied, obviously we're talking about in the watershed, but also if we understand the lawsuit right, it can kind of depend on where the litter came from, whether or not. Is it one of the parties legalities of the lawsuit or not? And then what is this special master? And how much control do they have? And, I mean, if they have unfettered access to property, we've got a problem with that. And so we just have a lot of questions. We want to make sure we're acting on factual basis and move forward from that fashion. But it does. We firmly believe it does have implication for the cattle industry and for cattle producers. We just need to understand how.
And it almost seems to me it's a power grab in that you lay another level of a bureaucracy when it comes to environmental regulation. We've got the state Department of Environmental Quality. We've got the Department of Agriculture regulating these things. Then we've got this another layer coming in.
And that's another big question we have. I appreciate so much what you're saying, Ron, because you're right. ODAF, specifically for animal, CAFO, poultry, et cetera, CAFO, confined animal feeding operation. I got to define an acronym before I use it there. ODAF, the Department of Agriculture, is just done such a good job. And we, as well as some other folks in the state, other entities, worked very hard to get delegation to ODAF from EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, regarding CAFO and poultry regulation in terms of nutrient management and so forth. So we want ODAF to be involved in this, and they do a wonderful job. There's a very talented group of people over there, obviously all the way up to the secretary. Secretary Arthur is the best in the country, but her staff below her is just a really fantastic, good staff. What's their role here? How do they play into this? And we have some concerns about that. Is this special master, does it remove some of the authority of the ODAF? Does DEQ step up and have more authority? Not that that's necessarily good or bad. Personally, I have some reservations about that because we're so used to working with ODAF, but we just need to understand how that's going to work. And so there's a lot of questions, a lot of moving pieces, a lot of moving parts here. We may not find out a lot of these until the appeal process goes through, but we sure have to ask them and we sure have to talk about it. And we sure have to think about how does this impact the cattle industry in the watershed, but as importantly, how does this impact agriculture and the use of manure beyond the watershed? Because it's not a far stretch to think about how cattle manure, think feed yard situations, could be impacted by this. And so I'm not suggesting it is, I'm just suggesting it could be, right. And so we want to understand and learn about that.
Yeah, we think somewhere in that mix, EPA may be getting their feelings hurt. And we could see some legal action from the feds as well.
Golly, Bob, you just scared me to death. I mean, but I think you're right. I think that we just... I mean,
this special master, that's a huge leap by this judge.
This special master, just to be honest, is a really scary deal. It's just a scary deal. We've not had to do... I know there's been one over at the Uchi Spavinaw and so forth, and there, in the past, there's a little bit of history regarding it. But there's just a lot of questions on this, Ron, and I can draw up a lot of potential negatives to that. Perhaps there's some positives. I want to try to be open-minded. I want to try to be open-minded, but, man, I'm really struggling to see it. So let's talk about it. Let's have a discussion. Let's think about it. Let's hear from both sides and move forward from that standpoint.
I guess... The elephant in the room also is the fact that OCA quite a while ago did endorse Gentner Drummond for the governor's race. I'm sure there's some of your members that are maybe saying, huh?
Yeah, we're having a discussion on that, and that is going to be part of the discussion. There's no way to really separate that as Attorney General and him being on the side of the state prosecuting the poultry operators. Poultry companies. So I want to get that right. So yes, we are having members go, okay, what's going on here? Why is this? Attorney General Drummond is a member of OCA. He's a cattle producer. That's why we've invited him to come and say, rather than try to work off the news, and we love the news, don't get me wrong, Ron, but rather than try to, come tell us what you're doing. What's your objective here? What you're thinking about? How are you pro-agriculture? We've heard him say we need and can have a robust poultry industry while having clean water. Okay, we agree. Absolutely. Everybody wants clean water. And quite frankly, and you can quote a cattleman for saying this, we need a robust poultry industry in the state of Oklahoma. We want that. And so what's your plan, General Drummond? How are you going to do that? And so we want to give him a fair shake and an opportunity to talk about that. Quite frankly, though, we want to give a fair shake to the poultry side of the conversation as well and understand what are they thinking. And so we're very blessed to be able to set that up for our policy meeting. Really want to encourage OCA members to come. And let me say this, Ron, too. I know this is an Illinois River watershed issue, so it's tempting if I'm in southwest Oklahoma or western Oklahoma to go, you know, that's a chicken issue or that's an Illinois River issue. It's not. It is an agriculture issue. And, you know, poultry today, cattle tomorrow. Again, how does this go beyond the Illinois watershed? We've pulled NCBA in to understand a discussion. We've got a great set of environmental lawyers there, Mary Thomas and her crew. And so, you know, we want to truly understand this, and we've got an opportunity to think about it and discuss it. So really want to encourage OCA members, hey, if you're not in the Northeast, don't ignore this. We need to be a part of this.
And I think you alluded to me that you also have a friend, Colin Woodall, coming.
We are so excited to have Colin come. Yes, you know, I don't want to overshadow that. Colin Woodall, NCBA CEO, a great friend. I've known Colin since he was in high school in Big Spring, Texas. I was an extension agent.
Wow.
Yeah, I was his extension agent. So every success of Colin is due to his extension educator. I'm kidding. I'm obviously kidding.
But I'll buy that.
Yeah, there you go. But we're just so thrilled to have Colin come and talk about NCBA and some of the we're on the, you know, the right before Nashville, so the cattle con and the annual convention. NCBA is doing some great work in DC navigating some of these really tough issues when your president, who's your real good friend, Trump, comes out and says beef is too expensive, and we absolutely disagree with that, then they have really done a good job navigating that and working through a very tough environment when you're dealing with a very good friend, if you will, from a policy standpoint. And so we're anxious to have Colin here. We're very excited that he's able to come and be with us and share that NCBA message, both from the policy side. We're going to ask him to talk a little bit about Federation news, too, the beef checkoff. We want to understand what the Federation's up to because they're doing some great work regarding research. Hey, how about these dietary guidelines? I mean, you know, that...
I think Shaylee McNeil wrote them.
I think she did. And she works for... That's right. She works for NCBA. What we need folks to know about these dietary guidelines is this didn't happen overnight. This took years and years. When I was at the Beef Council in 2000 to 2004, we were working on the dietary guidelines and positioning beef positively in the dietary guidelines. This is 20, 30 years of work. And finally, we've got a very good set of guidelines that really emphasize protein and whole foods, and beef fits right square in the middle of it. And I know folks are out there going, I could care less what the federal government says regarding what I need to eat. I get that. But if you think about funding from the federal government and then food decisions there, so think about SNAP, think about schools, you know, think about those entities that receive federal funds, they're going to follow the dietary guidelines. And so very, very critical and a huge win for the beef industry and the Federation, the Beef Checkoff, and the policy side, working from the policy perspective there too.
I cannot believe this, but we've talked about 14 minutes now. We didn't mention New World Screwworm.
We didn't mention.
Wow.
Wow. Dadgummit, why'd you do that, Ron? Why'd you do that? Yeah, and that's another thing. NCBA has been just a great leader on screwworm, and I hope we don't. I hope we get to the point where we're hardly ever talking about it. Unfortunately, we need to. We're in winter. It's easy to not think about it. We're going to come into summer, spring and summer, and unfortunately, we still have to deal with this issue and help Mexico deal with it. And we also need to address that border regarding allowing live cattle trade. That's a double-edged sword, and golly bum, I don't want to import any cattle. I don't want to import any beef. But from a beef industry standpoint, we really need to think about holistically, and we really need those cattle coming in. Because our feed yards down this part of the country were kind of built around that, and we want those feed yards to stay robust. We don't want to be shipping our cattle a long ways away to feed them, and so whether we own them or not. And then if you think about Mexico really developing their own industry while they're keeping it, that means they're going to compete with us. I'd rather import those cattle, feed them here, and use them in our system rather than compete with Mexico on both the domestic, meaning North America, if you'll let me use that term for that, and then the global front. So a lot of important things to think about there, but certainly we need to talk about the screwworm, and we're going to do that at our winter policy meeting.
Full day, for sure.
Full day. Lots of things going on. A beef industry is, golly, Ron, we're coming off 25, is just a phenomenal year. And thanks to our good friend Dr. Peel and his cohorts, he's, you know, telling us that things are going to continue to stay strong. Beef demand is just incredible. Consumers love our product, and to a large degree, it's because producers have really paid attention to quality and improved the quality. You know, just the percent choice in prime cattle these days is 85%. Holy smokes, the quality is just phenomenal. And then demand, and then supply, the cow numbers and so forth. And so, boy, howdy, 25 was great. 26 is going to be good, but we've got some work to do. And there's some policy decisions, some policy action that we need to look at and move forward. And, oh, by the way, one thing we also haven't mentioned is, hey, it is and we talked about it a little bit, but it is an election year. And that governor's race is going to suck the oxygen out of every policy room in the world. I mean, let's just be honest with it. And so we're and never mind the fact that now we've got every constitutional office is open. So lieutenant governor, attorney general, state auditor, oh, they're all. And so get ready, folks. Your TVs are just going to be flooded with commercials, and your mailboxes are going to be full of mailers, and you're going to get a lot of people knocking on your doors. But that's part of it, and we need to engage it, and we need to be active with it and participate in it. So here we go. It's going to be a lot of fun.
One other thing, we didn't talk about holding heifers either. So, you know, got to mention that somewhere in this conversation.
Somewhere we have to. And man, you know, what's the data say? Are we really starting to hold them yet? Are we not? That's right. We'll know. We'll know here pretty quick. And I think that's going to be very important for us to know. And then to try to understand. I know a lot of folks would love to be able to, and obviously it depends on, hey, I heard the other day we're going to hit an El Nino. We're moving into El Nino. That's great news for us. So maybe that means we can hold a few more heifers because we'll have the forage, we'll have the grass. There's just a lot to learn, which, boy, that's a great little segue into our good friend Makin's for his weather seminar at the Cattle Con. And so I look forward to that. But, yeah, we've got a lot to talk about.
Okay, great. Thank you.